This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And good morning, Igor, with the Master Gardener himself, Mr. Bob Harris. Good morning.
Good morning, Igor.
And, well, what are we going to talk about today? I see we are, well, we were on Facebook Live. I don't know what happened there, but it was just working 20 seconds
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, it was.
So anyway, we do have show and tell. I'll get that up and working.
Yeah.
So we'll have some... things to look at today on Facebook Live. We're also on the email, garden@wesb.com, and you just heard the phone number, so we are here to take your live questions as well. So go ahead, take it away.
Okay, so I've been, the last couple of weeks, I've been talking about the most common mistakes us gardeners make, and I said us. So I'll review some of the older ones, you know.
Not you.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You don't make mistakes.
And watering is number one, you know, most people tend to overwater new plants, so that can finish them off. Not enough fertilizer for those annuals and vegetables that we just planted. Planting too deep. A lot of people think they got to cover the whole root ball with soil. Taking care of weeds. That's a real tough one. I know most people don't like the weed, but it's a necessity. Weeds can harbor pests, and those pests can harbor diseases. So taking care of weeds is a real good idea. And weeds can also rob the soil of food. You know, they grow very fast and can rob the plants you want in there of the soil, food, and water. And putting the right plant in the right place, you know, making sure that if it's a sun lover, it goes in the sun. If it's a shade lover, that it goes in the shade. And making sure that the area is, if it's a wet spot, you plant plants that will accept the wet spot. Or if it's a dry spot, plant plants that accept dry. And then, well, I'm going to start some new ones here. And planting too far apart. A lot of people do that. And so we just end up with a mulch bed, really, with just a few plants in it, and hoping that someday they're going to spread out and fill in that whole area. And they will over time, but in the meantime, you've got the look of a mulch bed. That's what I call it.
Right.
Each plant, there's a label that says how big it's going to grow, how tall, how wide. And so really pay attention to that. It's much better to plant plants a little closer together than far apart. Number one, that, you know, it looks like a mulch bed. Number two, you've opened up large areas for weeds to grow. So that can cause you a lot of extra work. So try to plant plants according to the size they're going to get in a year or two. If you're planting perennials and shrubs, trees, you know, they take a whole lifetime to grow. So we have to make different plans there. So planting too far apart is a huge mistake. Another one is not knowing your soil and then not preparing it well enough for the plants. The plants are going to be in there for their whole life, which may be forever. And so we've got to make sure that their home is really the best it can be. We don't want to, most soils in Bradford are really clay, and we don't want to just dig a hole and plant it and think that that's going to be fine, and it looks fine for a while, but over time, it can't really show its true colors by growing real well and spreading. You know, a lot of the perennials, we plant them hoping that they get bigger and bigger every year, multiply.
But if you don't have the soil for it,
yeah,
it'll never flourish the way that it could.
You're right. And
which surprises me because I have, you know, bushes and hedges and stuff that were there. My neighbor tells me 40 years ago.
Okay.
And I have the finest clay and rock soil that you'll ever see.
Well, you know, it's the right plant in the right place.
Gotcha.
There. Yeah. I know the plant you have and they can accept poor soil. As a matter of fact, some plants prefer poor soil. So
that's your point. Your soil.
Yeah, your soil. But most of us are really trying to plant very decorative plants now. And so those decorative plants need good soil. So we have to amend it usually, you know, and it takes time. You know, that old saying, put a $5 plant in a $10 hole. And there's a good reason for that. You don't want to just dig a hole around here and plunk a plant in and think it's going to flourish real well. We got to amend the soil. We got to loosen the soil, add compost and manure and everything you can think of. At least in most areas in Bradford, at least 50% of that soil should be amended so that if we've got a wheelbarrow full of soil, we want to take another wheelbarrow full of amendments like compost, peat moss, so on like that to make that soil better. In the long run, it's going to really pay. In the short run, it's a lot of work and a lot of time, but everything in gardening takes a lot of time. So knowing your soil is extremely important and preparing it is even more important. Another big mistake that a lot of us make is planting too close to the house.
Mm.
We got a new house or we're going to re-landscape a house. A lot of people will buy a young plant, you know, for a reason, and then think that it looks funny if it's 5 feet away from the house. But in time, it's going to grow. So a lot of people will plant it 2 or 3 feet away from the house. And in time, it's really crowding the house. And that's not good for your house. You need that air circulation behind the plant, between your plant and the house to keep your house safe, to keep it, let it dry out, to keep bugs out, so on. So,
you know, my mother-in-law, the previous owner where she's living, planted some kind of a vine-like.
Yeah.
And it's right against the house.
Oh, yeah.
And it's getting inside of the siding. So it's in the wall, you know, so I had to, you know, cut it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just cause a whole lot of maintenance by planting too close to the house. Mm-hmm. Sure, it's going to look funny that first few years. But remember, most of those shrubs that we plant there in front of the house as the foundation planting are going to grow. And if you give them room, they're going to grow a little more rapidly and with a lot less maintenance. So keep that in mind. Not too close to the house. That's real important. We're still not on
No,
the
yeah,
air,
we
huh?
are actually.
Oh, we are?
I'm
oh,
watching
okay.
us on my phone. Oh. I don't know why our preview doesn't work on our monitor.
Oh, okay.
But I logged on through my phone. Yeah, we are live on Facebook Live. So you could comment on there if you would like to ask a question. And we could also check out the plants that Bob brought in.
Yeah.
And, of course, it'll be there after the show, too. So
okay. So I'm going to start with, and I've been doing perennials lately, so I'm going to continue. I did earlier in the year, I did all the annuals. So this one here is a real popular perennial. It's called Russian sage. It'll get a nice a bunch of purple flowers. It's getting ready to bloom right now. And a lot of perennials, you know, have their season of bloom. Some bloom in the spring, some bloom in the summer, and then some even bloom in the fall. But along with the flowers, this one has that neat foliage color, which can add interest to your garden, even when it's not flowering.
How tall does it get?
This one here, they have different ones. I got to look at the label, and you should always look at the label, too. This one here, 4 foot by 3 foot.
Wow.
Tall and wide.
Okay.
So that's a good one. It's a hardy to zone 5. That's our zone. Exposure is full sun. That's pretty important, you know, to keep this one in as much sun as you possibly can. That's what it prefers, and that's how it's going to perform the best, as in full sun.
Right now, I'd say it's about, what, 18 inches? So that's going to grow up?
Yeah, it's going to grow quite a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit wide.
And wide.
And the larger it grows, the more flowers it produces. But also, the foliage is kind of neat, you know, has a certain scent to it that makes it neat. But also, I just like the grayish color of the foliage, because a lot of times, you know, like this plant, doesn't bloom till coming up now, summer. So we want to add interest to that garden by giving color other ways, as you're going to see with the next plant, too. So this nice gray foliage, instead of everything just being green and it being a big green blob, we can break that blob up by placing a colorful foliage, too. So Russian sage, it's a very, very good perennial and very popular anymore. But this one here, a lot of perennials will multiply, and you'll have new plants that way, either by seed or by roots. Growing out away from the base of the plant and coming up and producing a new plant. This one does not do that.
Okay.
So
it won't invade the rest of your bed.
No, it's not going to. No. So keep that in mind too.
But you said it does get like 3 feet wide.
Yeah, 3 foot high and wide.
Wow.
Now there are other varieties. There's some dwarf varieties that don't get quite that big. So, keep that in mind, you know, check the labels to see what variety you're getting.
And now when you say full sun, how many hours are we looking
at? At least 6 hours of sun.
That's okay.
Yeah. And I think I explained earlier, but it's worth explaining again, you know, how do you know if it's full sun or not? You know, usually the southern and western exposures are full sun. The eastern one is part sun. And then a northern side of your house would be shade, depending on how close you get. You know, if you get way away from your house on the northern side, you may get back into full sun.
And of course, if you have trees that provide shade, also blocking the sun, yes?
Exactly, yes. So it's a real good idea to really know your yard. And, you know, it's easy to tell by just observing it or just taking a walk around. You know, in full sun, you're going to cast a nice dark shadow. In the shade, your shadow's going to be hardly visible. Or in the full shade, it's going to be not visible at all. So you can just take a walk in your yard and decide what's full sun or not.
And what else do we have here? We have
this one here, coral bells.
Wow. That's a very, what would you call that? Like a purple brown kind of?
Yeah, burgundy.
Maroon.
Yeah, maroon, burgundy. Yeah. And now they'll come in other colors too. You can get a green leaf. You can get yellow leaf. You can get burgundy leaf. You can get a burgundy leaf with silver tinge to it. They come in a lot of colors. Matter of fact, there's probably about 1,000 different coral bells.
Wow.
Or heuchera. That's what the botanical name is, heuchera, but we like to call them coral bells. Now, they do flower, but they're really not known for their flowers. They're very small. They're more known for their foliage color and their adaptability. That's what I like about them. They can adapt to full sun. They can adapt to full shade. So it's a very versatile plant. They will multiply and spread out. You'll get more and more coral bells year by year, as long as you've prepared the soil well enough and let it do its thing. Another interesting story about these coral bells, they're still extremely popular, but a decade ago, they were so popular, they were so hot on the market that a lot of scientists, botanists, and so on, figured out a way to get new varieties. And one of the ways was collecting seed and then exposing them to radiation.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Mutant plants.
Yes. And by doing that, they could change the genes and watch it grow and maybe come up with a new color, a new variety. By doing that, you know, it was kind of frowned on and still is, you know, but a lot of botanists did that because it was a good way to make a fast buck.
I was going to say, yeah. You know, where there's a dollar to yeah. be made, it'll happen.
It will. So coral bells, let me tell you a little bit more about that. I got to pull the tag out, even though I just should know this.
Well, you want to double check.
Yeah. Height 9 inches. So they never really get real tall, but they really show up well in the garden. And again, they help break up all the green that's around. The light, it's they say on the tag, part shade to shade, but I grow a lot of them in full sun, and they do very well in full sun, long as the soil's prepared. Where there's a lot of organics in the soil that'll hold moisture for a long time. You can tell it's a big, big leaf, so it'll evaporate a lot of water, so it's going to drink a lot of water, so it needs nice, rich soil and a good thick layer of mulch to help protect all that moisture. And that way you don't have to water it all the time. And they say space it about 15 inches apart because that's about how wide they're going to get, about 15 inches apart. So
not too much bigger than what it is in the plant or in the pot.
Right now.
A little bit.
Until it starts to throw out, and you can't see these, but it'll throw out little runners that will take root, develop into a new plant.
Oh, neat. Okay.
Now, you can dig those new plants out after a year and put them somewhere else, or you can let it just make the mother plant look bigger and bigger.
We'll take a short break, and we will take some phone calls. If you have a question, you can feel free to give us a call, 814-368-9372. And we're on Facebook Live as well, and you can send us an email, garden@wesb.com. Be right back in 30 seconds on B107.5 and The Gardening Show.
Is your lawn looking a little brown and ragged? They have what you need at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find many options in the line of garden hoses, sprinkler heads, and fertilizers to turn that lawn back to the lush green carpet that we all love. But why stop there when you see the variety of decorative stone pavers, mulch, railroad ties, and landscape timbers? Let their staff at Worth W. Smith help you turn your backyard into the oasis you're looking for. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And welcome back to The Gardening Show right here on B107.5 FM. I was just showing Bob the wonders of technology. We're watching our own Facebook Live on my phone and noticing it captions it like as soon as we say it.
Yeah.
It's so strange how this artificial intelligence knows what we're talking about. It's only a matter of time before our phones and computers catch on to us.
Yeah.
Take over.
Although it can be a big benefit, you know, especially for us gardeners, you know, we can look up anything at any time. And so we should be using that as gardeners to help us make those decisions or solve those problems. Because there's a lot of good, there are some bad ones too that are just full of baloney. But there's a mostly good ones. So I put these two together to show you the contrast, you know, and that's what we should be trying to do in a lot of our gardens.
So when you say the two, we're talking Russian sage.
Russian sage.
And
coral bells.
Coral bells.
Yes. So we should try to strive to do that because not all plants are going to bloom from spring all the way to fall. So in order to add interest, we should mix colors of foliage and heights. Of foliage too. We got the tall Russian sage and the shorter coral bells. So that makes for a real nice look. And again, remember to go by the spacing on the tags. Don't plant them real far apart, you know, thinking, well, I'm going to save money. I'll plant these guys 5 feet apart. It's going to look a little silly for quite a while until they spread. And they're not going to spread. And I really hate to bring this up, but they're not going to spread like they can if you've put down landscape fabric.
Mm.
That's going to stop them from spreading. So if you are going to use landscape fabric, make sure that you cut the hole wide enough around that plant so it has the ability to multiply in soil rather than getting blocked out by landscape fabric.
Okay, good advice.
And a lot of perennials, a real common one is black-eyed Susans. They do well in Bradford, and they're well worth having. It's a real good perennial. But they like to multiply by seed. So sometimes we will leave the flower on there. I talk about deadheading all the time, removing dead flowers. Some plants we want to leave them on there, like the black-eyed Susan, because that flower will eventually produce seeds. Those seeds will drop down to the ground, the ones that the birds don't get. The birds will get their share, too, will drop down to the ground. And come spring, they will germinate after they've had a full winter. They need that cold period to break their dormancy, we call it. And so if we don't have a fabric there, mulch is all right. They can germinate in mulch. But if we have a fabric there, those seeds can germinate, but the roots cannot penetrate into the soil and develop into a full plant. So again, make sure that when you plant a plant that you want to see it multiply and get bigger and bigger, cut a nice wide circle out so that plant can do that. And like I said, some of them that produce the flower and seed and we want to multiply, leave those flowers on there right through the winter, and that we'll get that seed onto the ground and we'll have many new plants the next year.
But you said they need the cold, the snow?
Yeah, yeah. Most perennials
no kidding.
Need a cold period. You know, if you're going to collect perennial seeds, they need a cold period. It's called stratification, you know, in the botany world. That doesn't mean nothing to anybody. I'm just showing off. Or scarification. I'm sorry. Here, I even got it wrong. Scarification.
See?
Yeah.
Mr. Fancy Pants Gardener.
Yeah. Yeah. They need that cold period that sends them a signal, and it also helps crack open the seed coat. Otherwise, that seed coat can keep enclosed that embryo that's inside that becomes a new plant, can keep it enclosed so it can't germinate. So if you are going to collect seeds and you want to move that plant by seed, then collect seeds in the fall, put them in a plastic bag with a paper towel. Make sure they're dry first, then put them in the back of the refrigerator. That way, that will emulate the cold period that Mother Nature is going to give them. Then in the spring, you can go out and scatter them or plant them where you want. You can even plant them in pots or jugs and start to grow them that way.
How cool.
Very successful way of multiplying plants that make seed. Not all make seed. Like I said, you know, the Russian sage is not going to make a viable seed. It's just going to be that one plant. Of course, it's going to get bigger, 3 foot by 3 foot or so, but not going to multiply. So keep that in mind there, too. Now, that's not going to be on the tag. That you're going to have to look up.
Oh, okay. They could only fit so much.
Yeah, so much information on them tags. Yeah. What else we want to talk about?
Yeah. Well, you know, it is 4th of July weekend.
Yeah.
Red, white, and blue.
That's right.
Yeah. How do you get those colors with flowers? Because those are kind of blue. I don't see a lot of blue.
No. Yeah. It's difficult. You have to use your imagination. A lot of us like to use that dark purple and call it a blue. You know, and you get that a real common one. Back in the day and still is today, is red, white, and blue petunias. Now, it's not a blue petunia. I will admit, you know, Jude, if you're listening, my wife, you know, blue is just an extremely rare color in nature because it takes certain conditions to make that blue. As a matter of fact, you know, scientists have been striving for decades and centuries even to develop that blue rose, and it just can't happen. Because of number one, the pH of the flower itself does not accept the blue, which is called delphinium, to continue. So we never see, or not never, we rarely see a true blue in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are those flowers that do produce an alkaline blossom that will produce blue, you know, but they're very, very few between. matter of fact, one of them that's kind of my favorite, and you see along the highways all the time, is chicory. That you'll see a
chicory?
Lot. Chicory.
Chicory,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's got a long history in America. It's not a native plant, but it has become a native plant all over America, and it's very common to see along the roadways. You'll see the Queen Anne's lace with that big umbel, they call it, of flowers, white. And then you'll see some blue dispersed on a weedy-looking plant, I'll call it. Here and there, they like to grow along highways because they are one of the few plants that thrives on really poor conditions.
Mm, wow.
Yeah. So they grow along the edge of the highway where it's salty, oily, not really soil there. Mm-hmm. That's where they thrive. And as the further you get away from the highway, 10, 20 feet away, you won't see any chicory growing because it's the soil's just too good for them. But I get a long history there. Way back in the 1800s, coffee and tea and so on was hard to come by. But pioneers discovered that the chicory seed, you know, you can crush it up and brew it, and it'll make a nice tea or a coffee that way. And as a matter of fact, it's kind of common now, chicory-flavored coffee, chicory-flavored tea.
Wow.
So it made a good substitute, and a lot of people planted it, and it kind of took over America that way. But it's a pretty plant, and it's blue. In my mind, it's blue. Some may argue it might be a little purplish to some, but I think it's a blue.
But you're not going to plant that? They have to be in a kind of like the highway conditions?
I think you can be successful in the garden. Just don't fertilize it or water it a lot.
Neglect it. It'll be
fine.
Yeah,
neglect it. It's one of those plants that thrives on neglect. Yep. And there are several plants that thrive on neglect. So keep that in mind. If you got a really poor place, maybe chicory might be a good choice.
Now, the original question that I'm wondering, if I want to make a big impact for the 4th, right?
Yeah.
For the weekend and, you know, for the rest of the summer, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Patriotic kind of colors and that you could really see from the road from about, I don't know, 40 feet away or what have you. What's the best kind of flower that, you know, one can put in front of their house?
Wow. There's so many.
Yeah.
But you want to go with red, white, and blue.
Well, sure. Or the, yeah. You know, the most colorful impact that you can get, you know, like the biggest spread of color.
Okay. So what's popular right now are the roses, the knockout roses, ever-blooming roses. They do put on quite a show. And they've been developed now to where it's pretty easy to grow them. And they're pretty hardy. They go through our winters quite easily. They don't get the bugs and the diseases that the old roses commonly got. Some of the roses are really nice.
Do they still have the prickers? Did they breed that out
they
of them
still,
yet?
Nope, they still have the thorns. Yep. another one that's extremely popular are the hydrangeas. That's one plant that I really like a lot. I like to go up the Oak Hill Cemetery mm-hmm. when the hydrangeas are in bloom. You're looking at 100-plus-year-old shrubs.
So cool,
yes, that bloom. Now, they're all in white, but that white is a fabulous color. Those blooms are real big. They're a plant that goes forever with no care at all. Those particular ones, there are hydrangeas that do take some care, especially if you want to get the blues and the pinks and the reds. They do take a little bit of extra care. Well worth it, though. So those are ones that really make a big impact if that's what you're looking for.
All right. Anything else that you wanted to hit on today before we end the show?
Yes. Be aware that we're coming into July. We are in July.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's been traditionally called the bug month.
Bug month.
All of a sudden, you're going to see a lot of bugs appear in your garden. And with all the rains, we're all of a sudden going to see a lot of slugs and snails.
I've noticed already. Yeah.
So if you don't have chickens.
they leave the slugs alone. I don't know why. They must not like the flavor.
Yeah, maybe. Be aware, you know, and be prepared for a little bit of damage or, you know, a lot of damage. You know, be prepared to do something about it because it is bug month and bug populations will explode now.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, that's good news, huh? Well, that's just nature.
Yep. That's of course, with the bad bugs, you get a lot of good bugs.
So. That's right.
Hey, listen. Yep.
And sometimes just being patient, and it may take a few years, maybe not just in 1 year, just being patient, you can attract the good bugs that attack the bad bugs, and that population can build up to a point that pretty soon it gets equal. You'll still get damaged bad bugs, but the good bugs will take care of them for you. Now, if you're going to go out there and spray any kind of concoction, to get rid of those bad bugs, you delay that good bug population also. So
just be aware of what you're doing.
And that's a choice you have to make, you know. Do you want to get rid of the bad bugs right away, or do you just want nature to take its course and accept a little bit of damage, hopefully not too much damage?
Yeah, as long as it's not devastating, you know, why don't you take a step back like 10 feet and look at the whole picture, right?
That's exactly right, yeah.
Is it a devastating kind of sight, or you don't even notice the damage on some leaves here and there, right?
That's right.
All right. Thank you so much, Bob.
You're welcome.
I'll talk again next week.
You bet.
Okay. Very good. Thanks to Worth W. Smith, our sponsor today. The Gardening Show right here on B107.5 FM and on demand at WESB.com.